Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And UnitedHealthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Farmers and scientists have been getting together around the country lately, and our next story gives you a taste of some of the research which might help New Zealand agriculture into the future. The Food, Farming and Freshwater Roadshow presents practical science research undertaken by Our Land and Water, Toi Tū Te Whenua, Toi Ora Te Wai. When it stopped in Marlborough, Cosmo Kentish Barnes popped in with his recording equipment. It was a busy day at Renwick's event centre as the Wine and Food Festival was also being set up nearby. Event organiser Mark Woods is a rural engagement advisor for Our Land and Water.
We're doing one of our rural roadshows that we've been doing around the countryside where we try and get into the rural communities, get our researchers out there. One thing to actually produce really good research and really good science, but we also need to try and make sure that we get penetration into our rural communities and give our farmers and our growers and other people that are interested in the opportunity to actually hear it from the researcher's mouth, and also the opportunity to sit there and nail them and ask them questions and actually get some more information as well. So
yes, and a good turnout this morning.
Yeah, so we've got, looks like we'll end up with a crowd of around about 70 odd here, which by all accounts the locals that I've been working with to put this together said, look, a good crowd has been normally 30, 35, so they're absolutely stoked. And we've been getting that a fair bit around the countryside as well. So interestingly enough, I've had a lot of people say, oh, the rural community aren't interested in this research. Well, this is actually sort of proof that we are interested. We do want to know more stuff. We are trying to do our part and give us the opportunity to actually learn this sort of stuff and don't be the gatekeeper.
So are you taking this roadshow all around the country?
Yeah, we've been in Balclutha, Alexandra, we're off to Tokoroa in a couple of weeks, Tauramanui, Taihape. I was really scared to go into the Hawke's Bay because I thought these guys have actually had a really rough run. It was probably one of the best roadshows I've been involved with, 120 odd people in the room. We've been into the Wairarapa. Yeah, so we've got a lot more roadshows to come in that as well. So it's been quite humbling to actually see the uptake of information and the interest that there's actually been out there to actually be involved in these. And I think what's really important in our rural communities too is a good social event too.
Yes. Have you been communicating with people in this region to find out what sort of research they wanted to find out about?
Yeah, so the one thing that I've learned in my time, I'm an ex-stock agent, but I don't know a local community like the people that actually live and breathe it. So the best way to actually play that game is to go and talk to the people in that local community and say, what's interesting for you? What do you want to know about? What's going to actually help you out there on the farms or in your businesses? So we need to be putting stuff together that's actually suitable for the area that we're in.
Mm. And who's up first this morning?
So Tiffany Tompkins is up today, so she's always been a crowd favourite. She's got a tough gig because agriculture in New Zealand hasn't necessarily always looked at somebody from organics with a lot of favour, and she's done a very interesting piece on EU farm to fork strategy, so how's that going to affect New Zealand going forward and what opportunities that we may have there as well.
Fascinating. And what sort of people are here today? Are they mostly farmers and viticulturalists?
So we've got a really good split today. Generally, a lot of these events have been probably 75% farmers, but we've probably got a mixture today of probably 50% what I'd call rural professionals, and then we've got 50% of the crowd as farmers and horticulturists as well, viticulturalists. So, yeah, a nice spread.
Just before the roadshow kicks off, I have a quick chat with fourth-generation Marlborough farmer Warwick Lisserman.
I've got a sheep and beef farm in the Awatere Valley, and I guess why I'm here is to just look and listen and learn. We've got so many things that we can do, and it's about putting things in the right order to make the most impact. So I guess it's making sure you're well informed, and that's where this sort of science that's been done is invaluable to us.
What are the biggest challenges you are facing at the moment on your farm?
Well, I guess the biggest challenge is obviously the financial pressures and the current dry. So one of the biggest challenges with the freshwater work is low flow, low volume waterways. In the low flow situations, it is a lot more challenging to make significant improvements to water quality. You can do a lot of stuff, but to actually make significant change or significant differences to water quality is a big challenge.
Mm. Well, it sounds like the first talk is about to get underway, and so I guess we better take our seats. Thank you, Warwick.
Thank you.
Improving water quality while maintaining primary production is the focus of a project driven by Lee Matheson from Perrin Ag. He's presenting his findings at today's roadshow.
What we're trying to do is look at three catchments across New Zealand which have recognised water quality issues, and then understand what is the capacity of those catchments to change what they do on the land, both in terms of practices and land use, in order to meet those water quality aspirations that the communities have, and then to understand what's going to be required for that to happen. So, you know, can the farmers we have on those lands today make the transition required to meet water quality targets moving forward? So we're working with the Tukituki catchment in Hawke's Bay, the Te Hoiere catchment here in Marlborough, and the Waiho Wainono catchment in South Canterbury.
On a sort of ground level, how have you worked with those farmers?
So in terms of the work so far, my team, and you know, I've got to note, it's not just me doing this work, I've got some awesome people on our team at Perrin Ag doing this.
Yep.
You know, they spend a lot of time in the spring on the phone talking to farmers in these catchments. We then corralled, bribed, cajoled farmers into completing online surveys for us. And we've then gone and analysed all that information. And then we're in the process of feeding that back to those farmers and those catchment groups. And then once our big catchment models have been run, we're then going to be on the ground working with farmers in those catchments to understand what those outputs mean for their business in particular, and then working with them to identify, is there a viable pathway for their business to transition? So that's going to be, you know, sitting around some kitchen tables, pulling out some calculators, having some pretty challenging discussions around what people are doing in their businesses and what they might have to think about changing.
Mm. Have you noticed there's been a bit of resistance to change?
No, look, I don't think so much resistance to change. I think there's resistance to the rate of change. And that's probably compounded when, you know, most farmers that I know are trying to do things better and in a way that will allow their businesses to be here and water quality to improve. I just think that we're asking a huge amount of our farmers, and that, you know, we maybe forget sometimes that our whole community has benefited from the decisions that have been made on the land for the last 180 years. There have been some downsides there too, but trying to turn that around now, it's a big job.
Mm.
You know, we've got some pretty aggressive and challenging targets for the water quality that we all want to have. And I think, you know, a piece of work like this is going to help inform all members of the community around the implications that might have to transpire in order for us to achieve those.
As you can probably hear in the background, there's a jackhammer going intermittently because they are setting up the tents for the wine and food festival here. But Lee, it sounds like this project is ongoing. There's still quite a bit of work to do on it.
We're about 60% the way through the work. The main modelling analysis has almost been completed, and we'll be out on farm to complete the business case validation work, and then we'll be writing this up, and it will be wrapped up in the middle of May.
Hamish Morrison, Rye Valley dairy farmer.
Why have you come here today to this event?
Yeah, there's sort of a good range of speakers, and just wanted to hear what they got to say. And the main reason I came was the Perrin Ag stuff, which we've already done a survey as part of that, so I was just wanting to hear anything they had to say.
Yes.
About that.
Oh, that was with,
yeah,
Lee.
With Lee.
So are you part of a catchment that has been working with them?
Yeah, we're in the Te Hoiere catchment, so yeah, part of that project.
What sort of work were you doing within the project?
The project itself, we've just been involved with riparian planting, and I guess the main thing would be the dung beetles. That's quite a new thing.
Yeah.
But yeah.
And that takes a while, doesn't it, before you can actually gauge whether they're doing well?
Yeah, I think it's minimum 5 to 10 years to see the benefit of it.
Yeah.
So it's definitely a slow burn, but that's the same with any of these mitigation tools, I guess.
Yes. How are things going on the farm at the moment?
We're having a pretty good season. We're definitely the green belt of Marlborough. We've had regular rains this summer. Production's been pretty good.
We are in beautiful Renwick here at the Arland and Water Roadshow, looking at the different research that they have funded over the years. And I was lucky enough with some colleagues to receive some funding to do some work on a paper in the European Union.
This is Tiffany Tompkins. She's the Nelson-based CEO of Organics Aotearoa New Zealand. I ask Tiffany what her research project is focused on.
It's looking at how the EU Green Deal will affect New Zealand's land-based primary sectors. So what are the rules and legislation across the Green Deal that are going to affect our exports to the EU?
What is the Green Deal?
So the Green Deal is a framework that basically puts a plan in place across all facets of the economy to be climate neutral by 2050. And there are many, many strategies and plans that touch on agriculture. So the biodiversity strategy, the zero pollution strategy, the farm to fork strategy, the bioeconomy strategy. There's so many different strategies that touch on agriculture. But what's important is all those strategies reinforce the goals that have been set by the EU Green Deal. Mm. The reality will be something that's different from probably the initial strategy, but the EU Green Deal is really a mechanism to transition and protect the domestic farm industry in Europe and level up for climate change without those companies or those farms and those brands going out of business because people with lower environmental standards and cheaper production costs are going to be able to flood that market.
Yes. Are you expecting that Green Deal to have quite a big impact on food producers here?
Absolutely. So in terms of the primary producers, we found five key areas that are going to affect all New Zealand producers. The first is a ban on pesticides that are already banned in the EU. So products containing any residue of pesticides that are already banned will not be able to import them into the EU.
So are there a lot more pesticide bans in the EU bloc now compared to New Zealand?
Yes. So I think there's approximately 195 banned pesticides in the EU, and there is currently 27 of those that are banned in New Zealand.
Gosh, so some food producers might be affected by this.
Absolutely.
By this change.
Yes, yep. Yeah. And so what we need to do is keep an eye on what are those banned pesticides and take stock of what we're actually using in New Zealand. Some of those pesticides may never have ever been imported here. But because they're not banned, there might be some additional cost to comply with those rules because you're going to have to prove that you don't have those residues. So how will we do that? So it'll be interesting to hear how the government will respond.
How important is the EU bloc for farmers and growers here?
Oh, yeah. We just had completed the New Zealand-EU Free Trade Agreement, which is really important. That'll add $1.8 billion, I think, a year on top of what we're already exporting. So the potential for growth in exports is phenomenal.
My name's Jim White. I'm the Technical and Sustainable Development Director from Cloudy Bay Vineyards here in Marlborough.
Jim was all ears when Tiffany was doing her presentation.
I just think it's really interesting to sort of see and get an update on what's happening with the EU and the legislation and how that's going to impact us, and then get a sense of, you know, some of this research that's taken place that may or may not be applicable to our business and certainly the wine industry as a whole.
Do you have concerns about the EU Green Deal?
At Cloudy Bay, we're owned by a French multinational company, which means that I've had a bit of insight into this. And we see a lot of these things coming down the pipeline, maybe a little bit earlier than a lot of farmers do in New Zealand. And we're seeing the impacts of how that's driving our broader company policy already. And I guess what we're trying to think about locally is how we can contextualise those requirements and then apply them in the context of growing grapes here in Marlborough.
What changes are you making in your vineyards now to prepare for any policy changes overseas?
We're having to focus a lot on the reduction and elimination of the use of herbicides in particular, which has significant challenges here. We're doing that in novel ways, such as, you know, inventing our own autonomous robots that can do weeding in the vineyards. And I guess formalisation of regenerative agricultural practices in our vineyards is something. In Europe, they call it agroecology. We call it sort of regen viticulture or regen agriculture. So formalising those, working out what to measure. And we're not tackling this as an individual company alone. We've got industry bodies that are working on this. And I think together as an industry, we will achieve these things because we're an export-focused industry and we need to adapt.
And I guess in Europe, some countries offer subsidies to farmers, of course, but also to vineyards, which helps them to adapt to changes a bit quicker.
Yeah, it's certainly one interesting thing is, you know, European farmers are subsidised to some degree to adapt to these changes, which essentially provides an artificial trade barrier against the importation of New Zealand products and from around the world. So, yeah, we don't live in a world of subsidies here in New Zealand, and nor are we like to anytime soon. So we have to really take these things on our own and work with them in the best way that we can do so possibly.
How important is the European market for Cloudy Bay?
Oh, it accounts for about 20% of our exports, and we export about 97% of our produce, so we're a very export-focused company. European as a traditional market, it's a growing market for us, and it tends to lead the requirements for regulations and information, so it sort of is a bit of a canary in the coal mine for the rest of our export markets throughout the world.
Mel McColgan is a program coordinator at Tasman Bay Guardians, a non-profit organisation that was set up to protect and restore the Tasman Bay and its surrounding environment.
I'm over from Atawhai Nelson today to hear from the speakers about the planning for farmers to mitigate their impacts on freshwater and to look for opportunities to collaborate with others working in the same field.
What sort of projects are you involved in?
A lot of what we do is education with community and schools. So a lot of it is freshwater, but because of that natural connection between freshwater and marine environments, we also run snorkel events. When it's in the marine reserve, it's comparing a marine reserve to a non-marine reserve and what the kids find there. Same sort of thing with our streams. We might go to an urban stream which is highly impacted by stormwater pollution, but then go to a very natural stream and that's forested and a little bit like our streams once would have been a couple of hundred years ago. And you know, sometimes we talk about the feeling in your puku and your experience of a place. So if we go somewhere where there's rubbish and stuff all around, you don't go away with that same nice feeling as when you've been in really clean, clear water that actually feels like you're, you know, being revitalized. So yeah, just good to see everybody understanding their own impact.
So do you work mostly with younger people?
Yeah, but we also, I guess, got a strong Matauranga Māori perspective around linking science and environment in traditional ways too. So we want to hear from our kaumātua, our elders, who have memories of how our environment was perhaps long before our rangatahi got here, and then also tapping into this new wave of highly sophisticated, intelligent young beings that are going to lead us and making us feel better about our environment.
And do you have strong iwi affiliations?
Yeah, so I don't affiliate to the 8 iwi of Te Tau Ihu, but I've been based in the area for 30 years. I've got pretty close relationships there. Could have had something to do with being a mutton birder from the deep south, because I got to know a lot of the local iwi by selling the mutton birds. So Ngāi Tahu and Ngāti Māmoe are my iwi affiliations.
Yes, and how important is it to come to these roadshows?
Yeah, I think it keeps you in the loop, because as we know, you know, working with councils and DOC and different organisations, we're not always resourced to talk to one another or communicate as well as we could. And so these are those opportunities to really see what's happening on the peripheral and things that we might otherwise not know about that are actually really relevant to what we're educating people about.
Hi Cosmo, I'm Heather Collins and I'm here presenting today about our project in Waikato and Bay of Plenty.
Tell me about that project.
So this is all about starting with the soil. It's about building a connection with the soil and thinking that when farmers have healthy soil, they produce healthy pasture, which produces healthy stock and healthy food, which means our people are healthy.
How are you conducting the study?
Okay, so we've got 10 case study farms and we're presenting about one of them today. So my role is a social scientist. I'm out there talking with the farmers, hearing their stories. And we've got a land management team and we're helping the farmers think about what do they want to do and helping them do that.
Yes. So tell me about some of your findings.
Okay. So I guess for the farmer that we are talking about today, we're presenting his journey today, his question was, why are we putting on so much nitrogen? And how do you change away from what you know? But he didn't know how. He didn't know how to do that. So through this program, we're helping him transition away from lots of nitrogen and synthetic fertilisers, and he has put in more diverse crops, more diverse pastures. And through all of these changes he's made, there's things like he's less time on the tractor, more time to spend with his family, he's got his young daughter, he has time for lunch, he notices the cows are healthier, he's less stressed. So by starting with the soil, it's feeding right through the chain and through to how he's feeling.
So it sounds like he's a happier man.
Oh, he is so much happier. And the big thing for him is realising that he can make these changes with the support and where it could go. And it's like he said to me, he feels like he's gone through a door. And through the door, and behind him was conventional farming, and through the door, there's this room and there are no walls.
Since that farmer that you've been working with has made the changes, has he found that expenses have gone up and production has gone down? I mean, what are some of the real consequences of making these changes?
I think he said the thing that surprised him the most, he was, because he's first time on the farm. He's just taken over the farm. He was really worried, was he going to lose money? But what he's found is by the changes he's made, he's still doing the same number of kilograms of milk solids. He's able to pay the bills. His costs have come down. They've come down and fertiliser gone up a bit in seeding. But he knows things are going to
ebb and flow.
Ebb and flow, as they always do. But I think he said, you know, the big thing for him was he was worried that he wouldn't be able to pay the bills. He'd wreck the farm, you know, all those sorts of things. What were other farmers going to think of him? But now farmers are looking over the fence, cars coming to his place. Oh, what are you doing? Oh, what are you trying? And we've noticed that on all of the 10 case study farms we have in our project.
Presenting with Heather is the project's engagement lead and North Island farmer, Nick Collins.
I'm from the Northern King Country, a little place called Piopio, and I was fortunate enough to have the opportunity to be involved with this wonderful Our Land and Water project, Rerikuta, Rerikatai. So one of the aspects of this project is the interwoven threads of knowledge and how we can all work together to achieve a better outcome. So it's the social element, environmental, cultural and financial aspects of farm business.
Yes, and it sounds like you and Heather are pretty happy with the way this project is going.
Oh, there's been some exceptionally good outcomes, and I think the key is just that support for the farmers. You know, it's really important, and people often say, well, why isn't there more adoption around alternative farming systems, you know, call it regen or restorative or integrating science with nature? And I think it's just that on-farm support that's probably lacking. So, you know, we're just so grateful to have this opportunity to share with these 10 farms. And they become our messengers. You know, it's that mycelial network spreading out into their communities. And so that's the key objective of this project.
Mm. Is this project going to continue?
Well, we hope so. Yeah, we're not absolutely sure as yet. Having been a change in government, you know, that's thrown a bit of uncertainty into the situation and may just mean that we just have to wait on a decision. But there certainly needs to be some continuum because we've got some really good momentum. And any farm system, as you know, you could imagine, is going to take a lot longer than 2 years to see any significant change. So we're hopeful.
That was Nick Collins, a speaker at the Food, Farming and Freshwater Roadshow held recently in Marlborough. The next stop for the roadshow is Maramarua on May the 1st and then Te Puke on May the 8th.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bowl & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bowl & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.